If you're listening to this, then you likely already know that being an independent musician can be a lonely road. And maybe your friends and your family just don't fully understand why you do what you do or why you invest so much time, energy, and money towards achieving your music goals. And especially early on, it can be hard to find people who really understand what you're trying to accomplish and how to make it happen. So that's where Modern Musician comes in. My name is Michael Walker, and you know, I can understand and relate to that feeling. I've been there myself, and so has our team of independent artists. And the truth is that basically everything good in my life has been the result of music. It's the reason I met my wife. It's why I have my three kids. It's how I met my best friends. And now with Modern Musician, we've seen so many talented artists who started out with a dream, with a passion, but without really a fan base, without a business, and be able to take that and turn it into a sustainable full-time career and be able to impact hundreds of thousands, even millions of fans with their music. And we've had thousands of messages from artists who've told us that we've helped change their lives forever. And it just gets even more exciting, fulfilling when you're surrounded by a community of other people who get it and who share their success and their knowledge with each other openly. And so if you are feeling called to make your music a full-time career and to be able to reach more people with your music, then I want to invite you to join our community so that we can support your growth and help lift you up as you pursue your musical dreams. You'll be able to interact in a community with other high-level artists, coaches, and industry professionals, as well as be able to participate in our daily live podcasts, meet these amazing guests, and get access to completely free training. If you'd like to join our family of artists who truly care about your success, then click on the link in the show notes and sign up now.
My favorite application of AI in music right now, and I'll say that I've been like mixing and mastering for 15 plus years professionally, but I'm sure all of you are, or many of you are familiar with iZotope software. The iZotope Ozone 11 software is unbelievably powerful, and the results that it generates using AI frameworks or LLMs, large language models, is incredible.
Welcome to the Modern Musician Podcast, where each week I help you turn your passion for making music into a profitable career. This is all about you discovering and expressing who you really are so that you can build a loyal fan base that truly resonates with you and with your music, and you can impact more people with your artwork. I'm your host, Michael Walker, and let's get into it. All right, I'm excited to be here today with my new friend, James Patrick. So James is the co-founder of Slam Academy. He's one of the world's first Ableton certified trainers, and he's helped shape the global standard for electronic music education. Both as a pioneering sound artist and author, James has taught and mentored thousands of clients, from beginners to music industry legends, across institutions like IPR, Dubspot, and Slam Academy. He has two acclaimed books and decades of innovation and synthesis, sampling and sound design. And I'm really excited to have him on the podcast today to talk a little bit about his journey with, you know, creating Slam Academy, and also where things are at as an electronic artist, where things are headed. How can we catch the wave of this emerging technology that we are lucky enough to be a part of? So, James, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the podcast today.
Yeah, Michael, thanks to you for having me. It's a real honor, and I'm grateful for an opportunity to share a little bit about my story and also maybe shed some insight into where things are going from my perspective up here. And yeah, it's really special to be here. So thank you.
Awesome. Let's rock. So to kick things off, would love to hear a little bit of background in terms of how you started Slam Academy and became one of the world's first Ableton certified instructors.
Sure. So, you know, everyone's life story is long, but I'll try and keep it brief. Basically, I grew up in Minnesota, and that I happen to be like right down the street from Prince, where I grew up in the 70s. And so he, you know, before Purple Rain came out, would like walk his dog up and down my street. And I was like, who's this little short guy with this tiny little dog? You know, as a little kid. And Purple Rain came out, and, you know, a lot of that music was, you know, over my head when I was seven or whatever. And but then the neighborhood kind of changed. And by the time I was a teenager, I started running into his bandmates and producer friends and roadies and everything around. And this was before he built Paisley Park, which is his current and was his studio for many years in that neighborhood in Minnesota. And fast forward many years, about the time I was 18 or 19, I was already really starting to DJ a lot. I always was really into the more forward thinking or experimental side of music. Anything that kind of made you wonder, where did those sounds come from, or how were those sounds made? And this music puts me in a place that classical music or even traditional diatonic music doesn't put me in. It puts me in a new space. And so that was always kind of my muse. And so I reached out to a couple of Prince's people that I still knew from my childhood. And one of them had a little private studio in South Minneapolis. And he brought me over and showed me how to use a sampler and a drum machine and a synthesizer. And this was in the mid 90s. And I was just hooked for life. And it was artists too. Like, I don't know if any of your listeners are familiar with artists like Aphex Twin or Boards of Canada or Autechre. These are really kind of 90s, really forward thinking electronic music groups. If you're not familiar with those groups, check them out. But I just was really inspired to do something different. And so through learning those machines, I just got compelled to rearrange and destroy sounds in new ways that hadn't been explored yet. And so It was just really that passion for doing that and taking people into a space they had never imagined was really what got me going. And nowadays I think that's really, really common, especially in the world of technology and the internet and AI and EDM and everything. Like, everyone's trying to take people into a place they've never imagined. But especially in the 90s, you know, everything on the radio was still classic rock or, you know, 90s hip hop and rap. And at the time, neither of them were really turning me on that much. So long story short, I got really into producing tunes and DJing, and I just kind of stood out as somebody who played music that was unexpected, but still made people really happy, kind of finding the blend between art and entertainment. You know, some DJs just go straight entertainment and it is commercially successful, but maybe not super creative. And other people go really arty, but then they get the other end of the paradigm for their results. And so I kind of was good at blending those worlds. And and then after doing that for a really long time, I ended up just becoming a DJ and producer as my career. And I just did that most of my life. And to lead it up to Slam Academy, after working for a variety of different studios or schools, just as staff and kind of just to be around the equipment and to make music with the professional gear that I couldn't afford. Eventually, I also was working in record shops. I became a partner in a record store, a small record store in Minneapolis, because I just needed to be on the like main nerve of the sound signal flow coming from Germany and Europe and everything through the record stores, because that's how music was distributed a long time ago. Eventually, I decided just to leave that industry and pursue education, like formal education, formal training myself. And so Prince's bass player, recording engineer, mix engineer, and live sound engineer had all came together in the late 90s and started a music school in Minneapolis, a recording and production school. They didn't teach instrumentation. They taught studio technology, cutting tape and using a console and all that engineering junk. And so I wasn't interested in recording bands, but I knew I wanted to get closer to sound. And so I went through the program and was valedictorian, and they hired me immediately. And this was right around the year 2000, when Ableton as a software was just being introduced to the public. And I had a mentor who told me, you got to get into this Ableton thing. They should be teaching Ableton at that school. By the way, the school was called the Institute of Production and Recording, which is the school that you mentioned earlier, Michael. So fast forward just a little while. When Ableton 2 was out around 2002, I ordered 45 copies of it for our studios and got a call the next day from somebody in Germany. It was like, there must be an error on your order. Nobody has ever ordered 45 copies of this software. And so I was like, hey, nice to meet you. You ever heard of Prince? You know, we're here trying to teach people how to make music. And we quickly developed a very special relationship, and they started flying out. And through that relationship, over the next 5 years, I helped develop the Ableton Certified Trainer Program, which was basically, at the time, Pro Tools certification was really, really big. I don't know if it still is or not. I have no idea. But Pro Tools certification was like an end user product. So Pro Tools was selling for, you know, $3,000 to $10,000, these certificates that people who use Pro Tools could put on their wall and hopefully get a job as an audio editor or a mix engineer or whatever. But Ableton wanted to do a different approach. They're more of an artist-driven software, so they wanted to certify their instructors. And I was like one of the early on set instructors. And so I helped develop that program, and it was really cool. And so that's how I became basically the first Ableton certified trainer in the world, along with like two other people. And that was a really big boon for my life and my career, because here we are 25 years later, and I still work daily with Ableton in Germany. And I'm really proud to be a part of that organization. And they are, again, still an artist-driven company, and I consider myself more of an artist than anything else. And so I gravitate towards people who feel that way. And I also, most people who are gravitated towards me are also just trying to express the sound ideas that they have inside of themselves. And so Ableton has become the tool worldwide to do that. And so through that software and through incorporating things like modular synthesis and like the Ableton Push, if anyone out there is familiar with that, these are hands-on, tactile, interactive devices that allow people to touch sound in new ways and open up a more expressive pathway between the ideas that people have in their mind and their actual output. So that has been wonderful. So to finish it off, about 15 years ago, an old friend of mine who has a PhD in music, unlike myself, said, yo, we should join forces and start a school. And I said, that's a crazy idea. Let's do it. And so we started Slam Academy. And now I've been the sole proprietor for a while there, and it's been wonderful. And we are an advanced, forward-thinking electronic music school. We cater to all genres and all styles. We have singer-songwriters and everything, but our primary focus is we are an Ableton certified training center, one of the only places in the world that can say that. And so we really push the good word of helping people channel their creative vision and joy into their life, and allow that to be significant and to love, you know, their experience as humans through sound. So that's the long story. That's actually the short story, but it still was pretty long. Thanks for listening.
That's awesome. Thank you for sharing. Mm-hmm. I love hearing stories like this. It's very, very interesting to hear too. I actually didn't know that Prince had his roots in Minnesota, Minneapolis.
How dare you not know that?
I know. It's like sacrilegious.
If you ask a Minnesotan that, they would say every human in the world knows that very, very well. And if you ask anyone not from Minnesota, they're like, from where? But well, we're all now, real proud of that. He was definitely a real leader.
Spreading the good word. Spreading the good word. So now, now everyone knows. Well, not everyone. Everyone that's listening to this right now,
you remember know.
And don't forget. You know, this is your duty. You're the light that must spread the good word. Very cool. I mean, also, I can just imagine that experience of like being growing up, seeing this like emerging thing happening with Prince and seeing the musical roots, you know, starting to form, and it must have made such an impression on you and what was possible. So it makes sense that, you know, from this root has also given birth to a very cool musical synthesis.
Yeah.
Also awesome to hear just how big of a part you are in the genesis of Ableton and their instructor programs. I know I've personally, Ableton was my main DAW. I've used Logic, I've used Pro Tools, but Ableton for me, I was always like the kind of like the tech guy with our band. I've played keyboard, background vocals, and I had Ableton set up with our backing tracks and with a lot of the production things that we did related to synthesis. And so I personally use Ableton and we have an Ableton Push 3 up here on our keyboard. We have a Push 2 downstairs.
Awesome.
So love Ableton. And I love the way you just even like described it as for this, this tool that's really meant to help people channel and express who they are through the music. Mm. So, I'd be curious to hear from your perspective, because I'm sure you've worked with a lot of artists now, and you've probably seen some patterns between when people are first coming in, some of the biggest challenges or struggles they have, and the ones that have breakthroughs, like what kind of does that for them. So I'd be curious to hear from your perspective, when an artist first comes into your academy, what are some of the biggest challenges or frustrations that they usually are struggling with at the beginning?
Absolutely. After teaching for over 25 years and also being a artist myself going through it, I can tell you that one of my favorite mantras that I still just keep gravitating towards when it comes to just, this is something that resonates even with me as an artist today. You know, I'm constantly making music for myself too. Everyone that starts out on their creative journey, I always ask my students, new classrooms full of new students, who here considers themselves a perfectionist? And very rarely was there someone who doesn't raise their hand. And if there's somebody who doesn't, I'll be like, oh yeah, get in the trenches, make a mess. And they're just like, woo! And they have no, their walls are down. They know it's going to sound a little off and they don't give a shit. And these are the people that can really flow. But then all the other people around them who are like, oh, I'm a perfectionist. They hear what they're making and they're like, it's a little off, but damn, I'm jealous of that ability to enter the flow state. And I think perfectionism is the enemy of good. And of course, like, it's funny, we were talking about Prince, who really was an extreme perfectionist, but nonetheless, that caused him a lot of suffering. I mean, he made thousands of hours of music that the world never heard, or maybe someday will now, but that's sad. You know, he was largely a misunderstood person, a human, you know, a suffering human, because of, I think, largely that inability to just fucking make, or pardon my language, just make a mess. And life is messy. And art needs, in my opinion, to be messy. And like, for instance, you know, again, I'm like, I have this modular synthesizer sitting in the background. If you're a perfectionist and you're going into this kind of environment, you're going to, it's going to be really almost impossible. You got to just love touching sound and just make a mess. Like, start by dumping the paint all over yourself and then like smoosh it into position and enjoy that process of making a mess. And that's, I think, for my best bit of advice for beginners, it would be that. Just get messy and don't be a perfectionist. Like, even enjoy that perfectionism part of yourself, but save it for the mix down. You know what I mean? You know, and just like when it comes to creating art in the beginning, just like one of my mentors told me one time, he's like, you know how you make electronic music with a hardware instrument? You got to find the play button. You know, and my question was like, well, it's the triangle, you know, and he's like, I'm like, but I'm not going to hit that because I don't know what's going to come out and how do I program it and yada, yada. And he's like, no, hit it. And then all of a sudden, just like random presets start coming out and you're like, oh, but I don't like that. And it's like, there you go. So you're an artist. Make change it, you know. And so now you're like making a mess and it's gross and like ugly. And I just think that's a beautiful part of, and it's a metaphor too for the human experience. You know, you can live your life like bolted down under perfect guardrails, you know, go to bed at the same time every night, get up every morning, eat the same thing every day. And like in the end of your life, like, what did you really experience? You know, go out there and, I don't want to say get in trouble, but push yourself and liberate yourself from the rules a little and just make a mess and just be free from judgment. Because there's no such thing as perfect art. You know, there's only this moment you have to live right now and your opportunity to live it or not. So that's my advice. Not to get all meta on you, but that's how I live.
that's great. No, I appreciate that. I think that's extremely important knowledge to hear. And often is the counterbalance is much stronger of that perfectionist mindset that we talked about. And so what I'm hearing you say is that really, especially in early on in the creative process, the enemy of getting in that flow state is judging yourself or trying to be too analytical or perfectionist about what's happening. So especially like when you're channeling and you're being creative, you kind of allow yourself to be messy, allow yourself to not be perfect. And it's definitely not going to sound perfect. It's probably going to sound kind of bad when it's first coming out, but that's really what gives rise to the ability to create something that does resonate, that you are proud of.
Absolutely.
There's an analogy, you've probably heard this one before, but I think it really demonstrates what you're talking about nicely, is this kind of like you have a big chunk of ice. And so who you are, your music, is sort of like this chunk of ice, and then you like chip away at it and you turn it into a sculpture. So it's been there all along, but it's like you start with the full thing and then you kind of narrow it down, you kind of figure it out. And it sounds like that's similar to what you're describing with like, allow yourself to just like show up and start the process of chipping away. Because if you never do that, then you're never going to get to that sculpture.
Right. To relate it to musicianship too, on even a practical studio level, I tell my students all the time, I'm like, sometimes you have to build like the pyramids of Giza and then start breaking them down until you get back down to like a grain of sand, and then you find the grain of sand you were like looking for. And so like with making a track, for instance, with Ableton or Pro Tools or any software, I'll tell my students, I'm like, hey, if you're not sure what to do today, just hit record, you know, pile it up. Like tomorrow when you open up your session and you hit play, if you're like overwhelmed by how much stuff is coming at you, that is a better problem to have than like feeling like it's just missing something and you don't know what to add. Like I always say, fill the canvas with paint. You know, I want to see every instrument in your voicing arrangement playing something the whole time. It's like easier to get creative in the end with the eraser than it is with the paintbrush. You know, so just dump it all on there and then decide, okay, here's the bridge. Let's erase the chord progression, or here's whatever, you know, and it just becomes easier to subtract from a brain dump. Like, but if you can't give yourself the freedom, judgment free, to just do the gross brain dump because you're too worried about like, oh, but my next step's going to be wrong, you're never going to get there. And I have students, no kidding, who have been working on the same track for like 4 or 5 years. And they're just like hyper perfectionists, and they're just still like trying to get to the last chorus, and they just don't know what to add, and they're looking at silence on the timeline. And I'm just like, can you please just stretch that stuff out for 3.5 minutes and then just get out the bazooka and remove things? It's just, to me, at least this is how my brain works, and I find it to be very effective with my students. Is just phase one is just the making a mess session, and grab your instrument and just play. And that's how real music happens, you know? So you can do the erasing session is phase two. And that's a lot more fun, you know, the cutting room when you have a lot of good material to work with. Right.
Mm-hmm. Cool. That totally makes sense. Yeah. So kind of starting with the unfiltered, be creative, be messy, let it all out. And then from there you have the raw material, which you can grab the eraser and you can start to subtract. Yeah. And you can chip away the ice block.
Yeah. Cool. There's a really great book by a guy, Dennis DeSantis. He's actually one of the technical editors or something at Ableton. And he wrote a book called 74 Creative Strategies. And it is one of the most profound books about writing songs that I've ever seen in my life. I strongly recommend it to anyone. 74 Creative Strategies by Dennis DeSantis. And one of the like 2-page chapters is called Write Drunk, Edit Sober. And it's just a kind of metaphor, but I mean, basically the idea is get in there first when it's time to create and get loose, you know, cut like reckless abandon, you know, tape is cheap nowadays, let it run, like, you know, and then come back the next day, like on a fresh meal, coming home from the gym and with a vision. And get out the microscope, you know, and that's, I love that workflow. I think that's lucid.
You know? That's so good. What was the phrase again? So
Write drunk, edit sober.
Nice.
Yeah. Write with a W, right? Create while free intoxication and then edit with clarity.
Okay. So the takeaway is everyone should get wasted. I hear what you're saying, Jim. It's just like unrelax, let go, be messy, put it out, write drunk, and then and then come to it with a fresh, open mind, and then that's the point to edit it.
Yeah,
awesome.
Yep.
Curious to hear your perspective as someone who has been doing this for decades and really helped artists master the craft of channeling, you know, their musical creativity and expression and kind of having those different phases. It feels like right now we're kind of entering a new era of how, or maybe we could argue it's just part of the same era, but I'd love to hear your perspective with generative AI and music as it relates to creating songs. Now we have the ability to just type in, I want this kind of track, and then it will generate it, and oftentimes is like pretty amazing what it can generate in a few seconds. Mm-hmm. But it's also missing, you know, maybe some of the heart or soul. I would love to hear your perspective on these tools with AI, and how do you approach using new tools, whether it's AI or any new tools? Do you think that there's a difference between generative AI versus the other, you know, revolutions we've had in the past with music production, or what's your take on it?
This is truly a humongous topic, and there's so many directions we could take this in the limited amount of time that we have, but I will just be selective about a few points that I'd like to make. First of all, is that music is a tool to bring people together and to enhance the human experience. A song that is made by a machine for a machine may be great as a standalone object, but until it does those initial things, like enhance relationships or actual human being experience, to me personally, it's just another algorithm that's ineffective, you know? And I think there's this fear that the framework will start creating songs and putting them on Spotify, and then human beings' music won't get listened to anymore. And then people will be streaming music on Spotify that's made by robots that people don't even realize. And like, that is kind of doomsday-ish, but frankly, like, if the music is good and people are dancing or cooking to it or cleaning or, you know, doing whatever they want to do with music on, and it's enhancing their experience, then I think there's something to it. But as a creative person with sound, I love the act of creation itself. Like, for instance, someone showed me the other day every producer needs a good vocalist, right? And so, like, why not just sing your own bad voice and then upload it, and it sends it back sounding like Marvin Gaye? And it's not just like effects on your voice. It's an entirely new timbre, like a whole new person singing exactly the words you sang, but it sounds like a real person, and it's in, like, you know, 20 seconds. That's obviously, you know, informed by quite a bit of heavy computing. And I'm like, wow, that's really powerful. But you know what one of my favorite things to do in my whole life is to coach a vocalist and sit with them and get the best performance out of them and watch them feel it and sing it. And like, even if that AI generated vocal is amazing, that whole back to the purpose of all this is the human experience and interaction. Like, even if I could do that with a free upload and download, and it's harder for me to have the person over and adjust the microphone and the trim and all that, I'd rather, because I want the experience of doing it. And so from a producer's standpoint, the AI tools are very powerful, but I just love creating too much to hand that over. I want AI to do my laundry and my dishes and clean my floor and do all the stuff in my life I don't want to do, so I have more time to do this stuff. I'm not going to personally choose or use up environmental resources so I can hand over my most sacred activity of my life, which is being around other human beings and being creative. Now, from a listener's standpoint, I am too amazed by some of the music that these frameworks can generate. It's quite powerful and shocking, and I think in many ways better than the music I can make. And as far as entertainment purposes, but back to that whole art versus entertainment, you know, I think music generally, like, as a creative person, you know, we're always feeling compelled on this gradient between, like, am I making the art that's inside of myself, or am I trying to, like, produce entertainment for other people? And there's this push and pull all the time, you know, and where we live on that spectrum can change from day to day. But if, you know, but for the computer to do it, it's kind of just purely a tool for entertainment. You know, maybe the computer is feeling artistic or not, but that's not, that's maybe a rhetorical question. Human beings feel artistic when they are allowed to express their ideas. And I don't want to necessarily accelerate the depletion of that experience from the life of any human being any faster than I have to, as powerful as it is. There, I'll leave it at that.
That's great.
It's a big, big topic.
It's a very big topic, and it's obviously nuanced, and there's different, it's not necessarily black and white in every situation, but what I'm hearing you say is that what you appreciate about tools is when they allow you as the human, as the artist, be able to do more of the parts that you enjoy, that bring you life to your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so if something is a tool that's allowing you to tap in more to that, and it's, you know, taking care of things like doing the dishes or even just like logistical stuff that you normally have to do, that's not the fun part, mm-hmm. then you're for it. And the part that you feel like is not something that you'd like to accelerate or even lean into is sort of this, where it starts to replace, you know, some of those aspects of what actually brings you joy. Mm-hmm. So I think that makes a lot of sense. And one thing that this reminds me of is, yeah, I've heard that as this relates to things like playing chess. Yeah, technically, I don't know, like if you just had robots like playing chess, they'd be way better than humans, like competing mm-hmm. against each other playing chess. Mm-hmm. But nobody's watching, you know, chess, like just robot chess players playing chess against each other, because it would be kind of boring. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people still watch humans. And so from that aspect, I think maybe there's an interesting point there with art as well, is that, you know, because that's like, technically, even if robots can create, you know, a certain kind of art, if it's not coming from the human, maybe there's less of a connection there. But also, I mean, I wonder what your perspective would be on, you know, we had Noland Arbaugh on our podcast a few months ago. Noland is the first human patient to have a Neuralink installed. Mm. And so this Neuralink is a neural interface that lets him control things with his thoughts. He's wow. paraplegic from the neck down. Wow. And so he was the first human patient ever to have this device installed. So he came on the podcast and we created a song together telepathically using his Neuralink.
What? Okay, I gotta watch that one.
it's pretty cool. It's called his name's Noland Arbaugh, and he's just a great spokesperson in general for the company. But I mean, that company in general, just the concept of brain interfaces is just like,
yeah, it's wild.
But I actually have a bet with a friend of mine in a business mastermind group I'm in. I bet him $1 million that I think that by 2040, neural interfaces will be as popular as cell phones are today. And obviously that's like a wild, and it's, yeah, improbable, but I actually believe in that. I'm like a Ray Kurzweil fan. The singularity is near. Mm-hmm. As was 2044, I think, is like the date that the exponential curve was predicting by. But wow. Anyways, before I digress more, I'm curious, as it relates to that, like something like a neural interface, what I'm hearing you say is like you have experienced, you know, what you feel like is the most sacred part of this, of making music, is that creative channeling, or that process of expressing who you are. And you have technology that basically removes that, gets in, you know, it's like basically defeats the purpose of music in the first place. Mm-hmm. But I do wonder if we had some kind of neural interface, can you imagine just like imagining a symphony and then it just like shapes in front of you?
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you what, I can't imagine the Neuralink thing. I just can't even like wrap my tiny organic wet mind around it, my wetware. But one thing I can say just on the AI topic that's worth considering before we maybe move on, because this could just go forever, is earlier when I was reflecting on AI tools with you, I was more in thinking in the context of tools that just generate the music for you, kind of, right? But I think there's an intermediary there that can be, that is right on the cusp. I think a lot of softwares are already exploring it. Like you could get a VST plugin that's like Super Drummer AI or whatever, and you could just say, you know, click the rock and roll button and it'll make a rock beat. And that's not necessarily AI. But if you start prompting it with other things, like in the style of John Bonham, but more like loop based and less triplet drum fills, and it can start just like, you know, you can start sculpting it using prompts. And frankly, I think that has a lot more intrigue. Because like as somebody who, I produce a lot of music and I play a handful of instruments, but I'm not necessarily excellent at any of them. Like I just wish I was a better jazz piano player, you know what I mean? And like I just love jazz chords, you know, and I can do it okay, but I'm not great. And so I'd love to be able just to be like, okay, jazz chords, Robert Glasper, but a little more, you know, and like start prompting and having it generate stuff. And that exists, you know, that is out there. And that kind of stuff, I think, is really compelling. And if it's going to empower more people to make music, I say great. But yeah. I just kind of want, because I don't subscribe to this kind of old school idea of you got to be able to play the instrument or it's fake or whatever, you know, especially when I grew up in the 90s or whatever, people would say, like, you know, if it's not real music, it's bogus, you know, like Prince, back to Prince, was like, never with the fake shit, you know? And like, I respect that, especially if you're a wicked multi-instrumentalist, you're allowed to, you know, yell from that mountaintop. But for the rest of us, I mean, we want to be able to be creative and touch sound. And so I think that's cool. So, but Neuralink, man, that's, ask me in 2040 if I have one, and I hope you're wrong, but we'll see.
Yeah. Awesome. So what I'm hearing you say about the state of production is, if you can use these tools where it's almost like you're in more of the producer seat, and if you are able to communicate the vision of like, yeah, I want a style of this drum and this, you know, style, and then you're able to iterate on it, that could be a cool way that people can use AI right now without completely automating the entire process of creation.
Yep.
I'm really curious to hear your perspective on this, or if you have any like insight. I feel like they're probably working on it. If not, like it's already there in some capacity, but it definitely feels like the experience I've had using AI music tools for the most part is like Suno and Udio.com, where it's like you're describing, it's like, oh, I want to write a song about my dog named Bob who, yeah, is flying a kite. And it's like, a dog named Bob is flying a kite. Yeah. And it'll like, they'll like create the song. I'm like, oh, that's cool. And, but it will be like fully produced. And so I'm like, oh, that's like interesting. But I feel like where it's really going to take off is when a platform like Ableton or any, like a DAW natively integrates with a large language model that has music generation capabilities that map it to MIDI and choose the instrument sounds and creates the MIDI track. So literally it just creates it for you. But then you as the producer or the DJ can be like, all right, cool. I like this instrument, but I'm going to mess around with this melody that it played.
Yep. Here's a great starting point.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to ask, how far away are we that? Or do you think, is that already happening? Or what's the current state of that?
I'm not really at liberty to speak on behalf of those innovations, but I can tell you that technologically we have achieved that as a human race for sure. And where and when or how it is deployed to the end user is to be seen.
James, give it to me right now. give me the software.
I can say that, you know, any person who's monkeyed around with ChatGPT and then opened up a software like Pro Tools or Ableton has thought, like, man, wouldn't it be great if the mouse over help window, I could just ask, will you just do this for me? Like, instead of mousing over the effects send and saying, this is the effects send, why doesn't it say, you should put reverb on there? What kind of music are you trying to make? I'll put it on there for you. Turn it up halfway. Here's a suggestion. Here's a good starting point. I mean, we are beyond capable of that technology. It's just a matter of how it gets integrated and in a way that is most effective for the lives of the creator. And that, I think, is the top priority on behalf of anyone on my radar, is to make sure that it is introduced elegantly and in a way that feels good for the end user.
Mm. Cool. Well, that's very exciting to know that collectively as a, yeah, music technology world, that this technology is possible and that people are thinking through it and creating it. I mean, yeah, that idea of like intent-based creation feels like that's got to be the future of what these tools the tools as minimal as they can feel. So it just taps directly into the intent, the better.
Yeah. You know, I'll just mention too, another one of my, honestly, my favorite application of AI in music right now. And I'll say that I've been like mixing and mastering for 15 plus years professionally, but I'm sure all of you are, or many of you are familiar with iZotope software. The iZotope Ozone 11 software is unbelievably powerful, and the results that it generates using AI frameworks or LLMs, large language models, is incredible. You open it up and it's your traditional interface where you're creating modules like, you know, master, rebalance, yada, yada, or you just hit the little spirally brain looking button and it says, here's a great starting point. You know, you have to hit play on your song at the last chorus and it listens for about 10 seconds and it says, turn your speakers down, and you turn your speakers way down, and then boom, here comes your song like it's out of a Hollywood studio. And the beautiful thing about it is that, yeah, it throws it together for you, but here's a great starting point is what it shows on the screen. Here's a great starting point. And then you go to each module that the AI put together for you and you can deconstruct it. It'll walk you through what it did and why, and you can learn. And as a like lifelong mastering engineer, and I understand the LUFS and the RMS and the peaking and the fading and the phase alignment and everything, I still have learned a bunch in the past year from that AI model, even on my own music, because I'll mix down a song, you know, no big deal, throw it in my master channel, build my own custom master channel, get really good results. And then I'll bypass my master channel, throw Ozone 11 on there, hit the little spirally button just to see what it'll do. And then I'll be like, wow, it sounds honestly almost as good as my master, not as good, but really freaking close. And then I'm like, but what did they do here? And then I can see step by step the signal flow path and everything that it did. And I have learned a lot about mastering through that interface. And so, damn, Ozone 11 is awesome. And then in the same, like, same manufacturer, iZotope, they make the RX bundle, which is wildly powerful. It has a ton of latency, so watch out. But like, I've had situations where somebody like kicks the mic stand and you throw the D-click on there and that shit is gone, like right over the middle of a word, you know, like it's just like, how, or like D-reverb, you know, it's not just a gate. I mean, it is like ripping the thing apart into stems and then like putting it back together without the reverb, and there's no hollowness at all. It's shocking. Stem separation too is another incredible technology that I'm sure you're familiar with, where no more need to like find the original multi-track masters to make a remix. Just buy the wave, ideally. Even people do it with the MP3s. I don't. But get your hands on a full res wave, upload it to the internet, wait 20 seconds, and now you have vocals, drums, bass, guitars, keyboards, and you listen to them by themselves like loud in full res, and you're like, it sounds like the original multi-track. Like, I do not hear, like, the vocals are crisp and loud and there's no phasiness at all. And that's a really powerful tool. Like, think about the origins of hip-hop and house music. These are sampling based genres where it's like, wouldn't it be great if you could just get the chord progression from that Marvin Gaye song without the singing or any iteration of that combination, you know? And now it's two clicks away and it's, for now, it's free. So that's really powerful. I'll mention, I'm just for plugging random things, I don't even know these people, but obviously like Serato Studio is a great stems ripper. iZotope RX has a stems function. But my favorite one is a free one, and it's called UVR, Ultimate Vocal Remover. You can get UVR online, just UVR online. If you Google that, it's a free one. You just start uploading waves and bam, you're getting stems. And it's like, you feel like you're in the Star Trek Enterprise or whatever, not to date myself, but it's wild. And for making remixes and such, it's insanely powerful. So, cool. Yeah, those are some ways that I love the way AI works, because it enhances my creative experience, you know.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Man, what a time to be alive. Time, right? To make music. Very cool.
Wild.
Well, James, really appreciate you coming on the podcast today to talk a little bit about your journey so far, and very exciting kind of seeing the current state and imagining where we can go to with or without a brain interface. But for anyone that's listening to this right now, would love to hear a little bit more about what you've created with Slam Academy. And if someone mm-hmm. here is interested in, you know, being able to supercharge or turn up the dial on the quality of the music that they're creating, how can you help them?
Absolutely. Thank you very much. So if you're a singer songwriter, or if you're a musician that plays a singular instrument and you want to have full ensemble backing tracks and full arrangements, or of course, if you're somebody looking to learn a deep more about electronic music production in general, which is used in every single genre nowadays, as you know, it could have been said true accurately 20 years ago. Slam Academy is an artist driven place that exists for the sole purpose of helping you create the music that you love. And we succeed at that. We've been doing it for 14 years. We are one of the only Ableton certified training centers in the United States. We employ some of the greatest instructors in the world, some of the greatest producers in the world. And we are also really disrupting the industry, because it's really, really affordable to go to Slam. If you want to have access to all of our materials, it's $100 a month. So if you want to take a live instruction course where you meet weekly for 3 hours with a professional producer and they review your songs and everything, it's an additional $150 a month. So max out of pocket is $250, which I have spent that much in like 2 hours going out to dinner, like easy. In fact, 1 hour going out to dinner. And this is a life-changing experience. All of our curriculum and our learning environment is very state-of-the-art and very snappy. And I'm really proud of everything we have to offer. And no one leaves disappointed. There is the industry of music education is constantly changing. 20 years ago, it was gold records on the wall and SSL consoles and Studer tape decks. 5 years ago, it was associate's degrees and iMacs. Those schools are closing too. The biggest one in the U.S. just closed last week. It's called Icon Collective. It's wonderful people running this school. Unfortunately, they're just being in LA and Hollywood and charging $40,000 a year. It just, the model just does not work for people who just want to express themselves and create music. And so we're here to catch all of that demand and provide a wonderful experience for the cost of one nice dinner. And, with that subscription, you end up having more than enough content to chew on every day of your life. So please check us out if you're out there and interested in learning more about that, especially if you're interested in using Ableton or you're already an Ableton user. Everyone in our squad is like hardcore Ableton users. Of course, we welcome you from any world of any DAW, especially in our mixing and mastering programs, sound design programs. You can use any DAW. But we have vocal production courses, songwriting. We have 20 different programs that all focus on the various facets of music, including music business. And we have a really exciting artist development mentorship program as well. So if you're in a position where you're already creating really cool music, but you're like not getting the reach you want, or maybe don't have people aren't hearing your story enough or understanding you to where you're captivating people and attracting an audience, the artist development mentorship course, it's like small format. You start with a vision board of the story you're trying to tell. And by the time you're done, you have a social media campaigns, release strategy, all the stuff that might not seem super fun to a creative musician person or music producer, but is essential in 2025. We're here to help you with every step along the way. So slamacademy.com. If you want to check us out, thanks for listening to my plug. Everything we do comes from the heart, and we're here to work with you and make sure you're living a righteous life. So let's do it.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you for sharing. And like always, we'll put all the links in the show notes for easy access. And it just makes me grateful to be around in a time where we have access to resources, you know, like this, mm-hmm. that can literally change your life without needing to be physically like in person. You know, you can learn from literally decades of experience. it's pretty awesome. So thank you for coming on here to share some of that insight and experience with the community. Definitely recommend anyone that's looking to elevate their music production or quality to check out Slam Academy. And looking forward to connecting hopefully sometime here in the studio here in Orlando. James, I'd love to invite you to come hang out.
I also have to take a moment for people out there who maybe don't have the time or schedule available to enroll in a low maintenance educational experience like Slam Academy to also just consider going to Amazon. As much as I'm not a huge Amazon fan, you got to use it sometimes. And just search Ableton sound design, for instance. If you type those words into the search field, Ableton sound design, the top two hits will be my two most recent books, and they are all about creating your own original sounds using Ableton Live. And so they're very, very in-depth. They both come with a free online course at Slam Academy. So when you buy the book, you will become a member at Slam included, and you'll get over 50 workflows and downloadable presets and samples that are made throughout the duration of the book and the end of every chapter with each book. So this is a really high value package option too, as a really fun way to deepen your experiences with audio and through the, you know, sound artist lens, especially if you're an Ableton user. So check that out.
Cool. Very cool. Yeah. We'll put the links in the show notes for that as well.
All cool. Right. Perfect.
James, thank you so much for being on the podcast today.
My pleasure, Michael. Thanks for having me.
Hey, this is Michael, and I just want to say thank you for tuning into this episode of the podcast. I hope you found it really valuable, and if you did, if you want to share the word, we really appreciate you leaving a 5-star review on the podcast channel. If you want to learn more about the guest, you can check out the show notes for the links. And before you go, I wanted to remind you that I'm looking for new artists to mentor personally. Before we get started, we always offer a free 30-minute coaching call to make sure it's a good fit before you get your campaign launched. At this point, the artists that we've worked with have hit over 561.3 million streams, a number one album on iTunes, and have helped many artists grow from scratch to making a full-time income with their music online. In a few rare cases, they've even been able to generate $1 million per year with their music. That being said, we are very selective with who we work with, just based on who's the best fit and who we can best serve. And because we have a limited amount of time available for those free sessions, we do require an application process where you can submit your music and you can apply for a free coaching call with our team. So if you're interested, go ahead and click on the link in the show notes to submit an application, share one of your songs. We look forward to checking out your music, and we'll see you in the next episode.